Lecture 16, Mediterranean Artisans and Merchants.
The Etruscans created a trade network from the Atlantic coast of modern-day Spain to the eastern Mediterranean. The desire for trade and to establish trading posts seems to have driven Etruscan exploration of the Mediterranean and colonization of the Italian peninsula. Etruscan contact with Greek and Phoenician markets and materials spurred some of the most dramatic changes we see in Etruscan culture, from styles of art to adoption of writing. It's an important clue to understanding their society. In the 8th century BC, the Greeks entered the Tyrrhenian Sea on the west coast of Italy and began to settle southern Italy, first establishing a trading post, an emporium, on the island of Ischia off the coast of the Bay of Naples, then founding the colony of Cumae just across from it in 775 BC. The Etruscans founded the city of Capua in reply, and that seems to have created a status quo for a while. The Greeks did not encroach any further north, and the Etruscans began to trade with Cumae as their primary Greek trading partner. This mutually profitable situation continued until just after 600 BC, when a new wave of colonization started. It included Pompeii, Herculaneum, Paestum, and the northern Mediterranean Greek colonies along what we now call the French Riviera. The Greeks of Marseille then moved south and occupied parts of Corsica in 566 BC, founding an emporium at Illyria. The attraction there was certainly the tremendous bay that provided one of the finest natural harbors in the western Mediterranean. Given the lack of natural resources on Corsica, it's clear that trade was the impetus, although the Greek historian Diodorus Siculus says they did take slaves, wax, honey, and pine resin from the island. Meanwhile, the Phoenicians had moved in and occupied the island of Sardinia. They had been trading and using the harbors along its east coast for centuries, but by 650 BC, they began to exploit the mineral resources in the interior, opening silver mines, and built a fortified outpost to protect their interest. Discoveries from Etruscan tombs, temples, and communities provide literally tons of evidence for foreign materials entering Etruscan territory. Much of that came from the Greek world. Most obviously, this includes the red and black figure painted vases, imported largely from Athens. More Athenian vases have been found in Etruria at the center of Etruscan civilization than in any Greek city. So many, in fact, that in the 18th century, when they were first being excavated in large numbers, they were called Etruscan. As an aside, this led to a variety of neoclassical design called Etruscan style, popularized in Great Britain by the Adam brothers, architects and designers who unknowingly were celebrating Greek artistic motifs, not Etruscan. Pieces of furniture, domestic objects, and even entire rooms were designed with black and red motifs based on the Etruscan vases found and sought after by collectors. Well, although the Athenian red and black figure vases were very popular, earlier imports from Corinth were initially even more popular. Corinth was the Greek city-state best connected to Crete, Cyprus, and the eastern Mediterranean, and the conduit of the Orientalizing style into Greek culture. Corinthian pottery of the 6th century BC was the leading style at that time and was exported into Etruscan communities in large amounts. The Greek emporium at Griviscae on the Tyrrhenian coast in the territory of Tarquinia was the entry point of this material into Etruscan lands. In the last decades of the 6th century BC, Greek immigrants, particularly those from Corinth, settled in Etruscan communities and established workshops, throwing, painting, and firing Corinthian-style pottery for the Etruscan domestic market. Corinthian pottery workshops were founded at Vulci, Tarquinia, and Cerveteri in the late 6th century BC. In about 550 BC, the East Greek communities began to come under the domination of the Persian Empire, which might explain the rise of Ionian or East Greek styles in Etruscan communities, as artisans from those areas relocated to their market in Etruria. Phoenician imports were also a significant factor in the Etruscan economy and the development of their culture. By the 7th century, Phoenician merchants were responsible for supplying objects that connected the Etruscans to the cultures of the Eastern Mediterranean, including the Assyrian Empire, ancient Egypt, the Levant, and countless small communities across the Near East. Such objects included bronze and silver vases, faience or shell objects, ostrich eggs, ivories, and glass. These were decorated with motifs taken from Assyrian and Egyptian art, with images of hunts, war, landscapes, and hieroglyphics. The repeated images of rulers and chariots would certainly have appealed to the Etruscan aristocrats, who could recognize themselves in the scenes, while the exoticism of the lotus and papyrus and Egyptian landscape scenes evoked a sophisticated international culture. In some instances, we believe we can trace the route of objects, such as the Egyptian faience Bokoris vase, found in a tomb in Tarquinia. The Egyptian pharaoh of 720 to 715 BC is named in a line of hieroglyphics on the vase. Of the Phoenician imports, perhaps the most curious are the ostrich eggs, which were found in tombs dating to the 7th and 6th centuries BC from at least 7 different Etruscan cities. Ostriches at that period were indigenous to Mesopotamia or modern Iraq, and the eggs were a delicacy as well as a luxury export, probably for the novelty value. Some were made into large drinking cups. They're found in Egyptian and Sumerian tombs dating back to 3000 BC. Their discovery in Etruria is evidence of the international nature of aristocratic status indicators in the ancient world. For us, they present remarkable clues to the long-distance trade, elite social conformity, and artistic development. Many of the eggs were painted or incised with decorations by Phoenician artists prior to export and sale. Some, however, including a group of at least 6 from the city of Vulci, were decorated by Etruscan artists. A 6th century BC example from Vulci is sculpted in shallow relief. The bottom point of the egg has a sun or starburst pattern, while the top has a series of 4 Egyptian-styled lotus blossoms radiating out from a circle. Across the center of the egg is a register of 4 rectangular panels, each holding a single figure, a winged griffin, a winged horse, a stag, and a man on horseback. The shapes, sizes, and designs of these exactly match the stamps used by Etruscan artisans to create friezes to decorate terracotta storage vessels. Ostrich eggs might have gained such popularity for a more spiritual reason. Eggs, or rather stones carved into egg shapes, were commonly found outside Etruscan tombs as symbolic indicators of the belief in life after death. Eggs were used as symbols across the ancient Mediterranean, especially in cults that promised the opportunity for life after death, notably the cult of Dionysus, Greek god of wine. Imported ivories also give evidence of exotic materials and foreign decorative designs. a number of very high-quality ivory reliefs and inlays, originally designed as decoration for furniture or household objects such as wooden boxes, have been found in tombs. Some were carved by the same workshops that produced the Nimrud ivories, so named because they were excavated at the palace of the Assyrian kings at Nimrud in northern Iraq. Made of elephant ivory and carved by Phoenician artists in a variety of Assyrian and Egyptian styles, hundreds of ivories dating to the 9th through 7th centuries BC have been found. Many of these were made by workshops in the Levant, that is modern Lebanon or Syria, and exported to Etruria. Others, however, may have been carved by artisans who emigrated to Etruria and who set up their own workshops in the region to satisfy the demand for this material across the Etruscan world. These Phoenician craftsmen would have been responsible for establishing Etruscan schools of ivory carving. By the 6th century BC, locally carved works are found at sites up and down Italy. At the site of Poggio Civitate, Merlo, for example, at least 130 pieces of carved ivory have been excavated that date between 620 and 580 BC. These were created in situ, that is, on site, from imported raw materials, as demonstrated by the discovery of a workshop with tools and waste materials from ivory carving, as well as as Etruscan names scratched on the smoothed and flattened reverses of the pieces prepared as inlays. The designs included both human and animal figures, including Near Eastern-style lions. One of the best examples of this Etruscan work is in the Walters Art Museum in Baltimore, Maryland. It originally was discovered in the Regellini Galassi tomb in a necropolis outside the city of Cerveteri. It's a 5-inch tall cylindrical ivory container carved by Etruscan artisans in about 650 BC. The body of the container is divided into three registers, horizontal bands, filled with figures, including sphinxes, charioteers, and decorative features such as Egyptian-style lotus blossoms. The handle of the lid takes the form of a winged sphinx, wearing a lotus crown and striding forward. Art historians refer to the period of the 600s BC as the Orientalizing period, since it's the period in Etruscan and Greek art dominated by Egyptian and Assyrian styles and materials. The Orientalizing phase in Etruscan art represents the earliest introduction of Greek subjects and Near Eastern influence into the art of the Italian peninsula. Another work of Etruscan art in the Orientalizing style is an ivory cylindrical box called a pyxis, as the Greek name is for this shape, found in a grave in a necropolis at Chiusi, a central Etruscan city. It represents the Orientalizing trend towards detailed small-scale decorative work on imported material, here again in ivory. These subjects, materials, and styles were transmitted to the Romans through the Etruscans, who, because of their extensive trade networks, were a conduit for foreign influences into Rome, from alphabetic writing to Greek mythology. Along with these imported luxury goods, we also find objects made of glass, that most common of Phoenician materials. Glass perfectly represents the international nature of trade and manufacturing in the ancient world. Its most important ingredient, the soda that's mixed with lime and sand to actually make glass, was imported from Egypt. Ancient glass is often referred to more specifically as natron glass, for the natron, the soda from Egypt, that distinguished it. Mainly small vessels, beads, amulets, and other items of personal adornment, these objects show the spread of glasswork and glass making from the eastern Mediterranean into central Italy by the 6th century BC. Unlike the ivory workshops that sprang up in Etruscan cities, a tremendous amount of research, particularly chemical analysis of glass objects, has failed to conclusively prove an Etruscan glass industry. As one study from 2007 concluded, their chemical compositions do not substantiate the hypothesis of a distinct glassmaking tradition for them, as has been suggested. This means that while it is unlikely the Natron glass was made in Etruscan Italy, the tradition employed is closely associated with that of the Eastern Mediterranean. Therefore, the Etruscan vessels may have been made from imported glass. So it's possible that the Etruscans imported raw glass from the Eastern Mediterranean and made their own objects, but they didn't create their own raw materials. I should also point out that no glassmaking workshops have been found. So the currently available evidence favors the conclusion that glass was a purely Phoenician product imported into Etruria. Well, if we can trace the imports so readily, what about exports? There, the picture is somewhat murkier. Despite centuries of excavation at sites around the Mediterranean, only a handful of Etruscan objects have been found at Greek, Phoenician, or any other sites. This has led to a cottage industry of speculation about what exactly the Etruscans were exporting in exchange for the obvious imports. It's been argued that they might have been purchasing these goods, not trading for them using barter or exchange. If that were the case, then we'd expect to find some Etruscan coins at foreign sites. In fact, none have been found. I think we have to reject that hypothesis. Another proposal was that the Etruscans were exporting raw materials rather than finished products, and that these naturally cannot be identified in the later finished form that they would take. Suggestions in this category include timber, copper, iron, various agricultural products, fish and livestock, minerals and stone, and slaves. Now, it might seem callous to include slaves in this category, but there's good reason to think that the ancients would have considered them as such. The Roman author Varro refers to oxen as semi-articulate farming tools and slaves as articulate tools. None of these would leave obvious traces in the archaeological record, and all have been proposed as Etruscan exports. For a variety of reasons, I think these would also have been, at best, secondary exports. While it's true that most consumables wouldn't leave much evidence behind, some, such as building stone, would, and there's no evidence for those. Furthermore, there's no surviving Greek testimony for the mass export of raw materials from Etruria into any of the Greek city-states. In addition, long-range export of raw materials was very expensive, given the typical weight of stone, timber, etc. It makes far more sense for all involved to have the raw materials processed first, at least minimally. The exporters make more money if they add value to the materials, and the importers pay less for them because fewer raw materials make whatever the trip is. We see this in better documented periods, such as the 2nd century AD, when the Romans imported half-finished sarcophagi, or stone coffins, from the Eastern Mediterranean into Rome. The rough sculpting eliminated the vast majority of extra weight and reduced shipping costs and final sculpting needs in Rome itself. Okay, I hear you saying, if that's the case, why is it that we don't find tremendous amounts of finished Etruscan products in foreign cities? Doesn't that sort of undermine your position? Good questions, and no, it doesn't. To explain why, we need to understand the types of exports I'm talking about. Most are essentially processed natural resources. Rather than grapes, Etruscan wine. Rather than fish, Etruscan fish sauce or products. Instead of copper or iron, either bronze ingots or, more likely, bronze products, including statuary and household objects. Exploitation of mines in the area of Massa Maritima began in the 9th century BC. The Greek emporium on Pithecusi is thought to have been founded to trade for copper as well as raw and worked bronze from this northern area. Cumae seems to have succeeded in the 8th century as the predominant Greek trading city, but Etruscan bronze is spread far beyond the Tyrrhenian Sea. A bronze-decorated tripod made at Vulci was found on the Athenian Acropolis, for example. Other bronzes have been found at a range of Greek cities and sanctuaries. These are only a fraction of the Greek terracotta vases that have been discovered in Etruscan sites. The reason is that terracotta, once fired, is always that shape of terracotta. You can't remake it into anything else. The same goes for stone, such as marble. You can cut or break it, but you're still starting from whatever shape it was. It can't be reformed or combined into something larger. Bronze, on the other hand, can easily be recycled, and it was repurposed in antiquity on a regular basis. That's why there are so few Greek and Roman bronze sculptures left. They were regularly recycled into new bronze works. Other types of recycling were common as well. For example, the reuse of transport vessels, amphorae. Etruscan wine amphorae aren't found on foreign sites, probably because the vessels were reused and repurposed until they broke and the fragments were thrown away. But a 6th century BC Etruscan merchant ship discovered off the coast of the south of France contained dozens of these wine amphorae stacked in the hold. While we're discussing Etruscan exports, it might be time to explore the issue of terracotta works. The Etruscans were famous in antiquity for their terracotta artworks, specifically religious sculptures. But they never seem to have been exported into the Greek world. The Greeks themselves had a thriving artistic tradition, including their own terracotta tradition by the time trade with the Etruscans became a major component of their economy. Similarly, terracotta vessels don't seem to have been exported into Greek communities at any sort of scale. That's not to say that some Etruscan vessels haven't been found at Greek sites, but unlike other scholars who have tracked these materials and concluded that they represent export materials, I think they reveal something far more informative. If we map the find spots of Etruscan Bucaro pottery, the characteristic glossy black pottery from the 7th to the 3rd centuries BC across the Etruscan world, some interesting patterns emerge. Bucaro is found on most Greek sites in southern Italy and Sicily. Other examples are found further east, at Athens, Corinth, Ithaca, Corfu, Paracora, Amyclae, and some Greek cities in the eastern Mediterranean, as well as on Cyprus. Within these communities, such Bucaro vessels have been recovered at sanctuaries where they were deposited as votives. No Bucaro was found at any of the most important Greek religious sites, the Panhellenic sanctuaries of Olympia, Delphi, Nemea, and Isthmia. Other Etruscan materials in bronze were recovered there, along with some of the largest assemblages of votives from the entire ancient world. This pattern doesn't just reveal trading patterns. It speaks to the movement of Etruscan traders themselves. Bucaro is found on sites where the Etruscans landed and traded in person. I'd go further and speculate that at least some of the recovered Bucaro reflects ritual behavior by Etruscan merchants. They might have left these as votives in local sanctuaries. Two pieces discovered at a shrine in the Corinthian Forum area have Etruscan letters scratched on them. I conclude that Bucoro in the Greek cities means Etruscan merchants were present. Does that pattern hold for Phoenician sites? It seems to. 66 pieces of Bucoro have been found at last count at Carthage, which of course was the strongest foreign ally the Etruscans had. As the two peoples teamed up to attempt to keep the Greeks from dominating the sea lanes in the central Mediterranean. Two other pieces from Carthage could strengthen a conclusion that these are evidence of Etruscans at Carthage. One is a 3rd century BC Etruscan relief sarcophagus found at Carthage. The other, an ivory plaque, a Phoenician product incised with an Etruscan inscription. Similar Phoenician pieces with Etruscan inscriptions were found at sites in Algeria and Malta. Further finds of Bucoro come from Phoenician sites on Sicily, Sardinia, and as far east as Phoenician-controlled Cyprus, and as far west as the Phoenician city founded at what is now Cadiz along the Atlantic coast of Spain. Long-range and large-scale trade had profound effects on Etruscan culture. I've already touched on the artistic changes that occurred with the import of Greek and Phoenician goods, as well as the relocation of these foreign artisans to Etruscan communities. The effects were felt far outside the area of art as well. For example, the Etruscan communities that either hosted Greek trading posts, such as Griviscai, or were on the coast, such as Pyrgi, were open to direct influence from Greek and Phoenician traders. In many instances, that influence can be seen in religion. Altars, offerings, temples, and sometimes entire sanctuaries were built for the worship of foreign deities. At Pyrgi, the Phoenician principal goddess Astarte was worshipped in combination with the Etruscan goddess Uni. At a sanctuary outside the southern Etruscan city of Cerveteri, Greek dedications to the principal Greek goddess Hera were found. As early as the 6th century BC, the Greek god Apollo and the divine hero Hercules were accepted into the Etruscan pantheon to supplement their own place-bound gods. From that period, we begin to see Greek deities and heroes in Etruscan art in all contexts, sanctuaries, tombs, and domestic spaces. Greek myths become ubiquitous in Etruscan culture. The expansion of Etruscan trade seems also to have been one of the drivers in the social and political changes that came about with the rise of what I might term a middle class, or a group of merchants whose wealth and influence began to supplant that of the traditional aristocrats. Evidence for this shift is seen in Etruscan tombs. One of the best examples is the Tomb of the Ship in Tarquinia, dated to the middle of the 5th century BC. As you might guess, the name of the tomb comes from the enormous wall painting of a ship on one of the walls of the burial chamber. This was originally interpreted as a warship, and so thought to be typical of the aristocratic military displays found in tombs with armor or chariots. But more careful study shows that it's not a warship, but a large sail-powered cargo ship with a huge hold, not the oar-driven shallow draft naval vessels. It's obvious, well, to me anyway, that this large tomb belonged to the ship's owner, who projects his identity in a way very similar to the aristocrats with their displays of armor or model warships. The ship celebrates his social status and the source of his wealth, and more importantly, his public role in the community. The ship is shown at anchor in a harbor where trade ships fulfill their primary role. This distinguishes it from warships, which are generally portrayed sailing on the open sea, where their major activity occurs. This survey of trade practices, routes, and the effects of trade on the Etruscan culture should lead us to some general conclusions about the nature of the Etruscan world. First, that they were not relatively isolated, but rather were connected by trading networks with the other major civilizations of the ancient Mediterranean and with distant lands from Spain and Africa to Egypt, Mesopotamia, and the Levant. Their aristocrats had a great deal in common culturally with their peers across the ancient world and celebrated their elite identity with many of the same markers. It seems that the wealthy Etruscans had more in common with wealthy Assyrians than they might have had with poorer members of their own community, a sign of a very interconnected world. We also learn from this material that the transmission of Greek and Phoenician culture into the Etruscan world occurred because of trade. The desire for foreign works of art fueled the development of Etruscan workshops in a variety of media, including ivory, metal, and terracotta. Finally, the rise of the merchant class shows one means by which the social changes of the 5th century BC occurred, shifting power and status from the traditional elites to the new moneyed individuals in the Etruscan city-states.